Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
In this show, we're going to dive deep into flips, wholesales, holding rentals, and creatively structuring deals.
So that we can show you how you can achieve that lifestyle of freedom that you desire.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Chasing Freedom Show with Noah and Jeff. Today we have a very, very special guest. I'm super excited to introduce to you Heather Blankenship. She has a real estate portfolio consisting of $30 million of real estate that's broken down into four RV parks, four mobile home parks, and a series of multifamily assets. So Heather, we're super excited to have you on the show. We're excited for you to share the wealth of information that you have and the knowledge that you have to hopefully help our listeners achieve financial freedom.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I'm really interested in picking your brain on is you building this empire that is very unique compared to what most people would consider like a real estate empire, right? Like you've done it through mobile home parks and RV parks and this glamping experience. So like there's this whole other side of it, because it's, I feel like in the RV park area specifically, it's also a lot of like creating experiences for people, which is not something that most real estate investors have to think about.
Yeah.
So I'd like to dive into that, but we always start with how, like your first deal, how you got into real estate.
Absolutely. So my first deal was an RV park. And I was driving across the country in a camper from Florida to California. This is like 10 years ago.
Nice.
Hey, it's just renting parking spots. This has got to be easy. It is not. you do not create an experience by renting parking spots.
Yeah.
So I started Googling campgrounds for sale and campgrounds in the area I was in. And by the time I got to California, I had bought a campground that I had never seen. And it was $3.2 million. And they gave me a loan for non-recourse and no money down.
Oh my goodness.
Not happen now. It was back after the collapse when banks still had things sitting on their books and they would do anything to get rid of them.
Yeah.
Which turned out to be a huge blessing, because when I called and they're like, how much money do you have? I'm like, well, I don't have any.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What I take away from that I love so much, and just for context, guys, we got to hang out with Heather at the Maui Mastermind last week, last month. And got to know her on a deeper level. So this show's really fun because I feel like we're already best friends. So,
she's like acquaintances.
Yeah, but acquaintances. It's fine. chill out there, Noah. Like one of the things I've noticed about you is like you don't let like the filters on how we should think affect the way you do think about things.
Yeah.
Right. Like you challenge a lot of the status quo stuff. Like even people that like, I'm like, oh, I should just listen to everything they say. You're like, no, well, let's think about that. Why are we going that direction? What's the benefit to that? So I really admire that about you. And that's evident in your first deal, because like most people would be like, I don't have money. Obviously I can't buy an RV park.
I'm not. And you know, what's interesting. You know who Sam Zell is? He's one of the largest owners in the world of warehouse space.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he's huge in the mobile home park space and RV space. And in his book, he said, I was successful because I didn't know I shouldn't have been. I shouldn't have asked for the loan. They should have given it to me. I shouldn't have been able to figure out how to operate an RV park because I had no background of that.
Yeah.
Same idea.
That's so true. So you were driving across country and midway through was like, oh, RV parks are a thing, and then bought one before you got to the other side of the country?
Yeah. And I got pregnant with my first child the same day that I closed on the property. So I'm like, pregnant, sleeping in the office floor, shoveling mulch.
Oh my goodness. Just getting it done.
Yeah. And so fast forward 10 years and that property is worth about $13 million. So I can pull the equity from that property to buy other properties. You know, as you start talking about Burr method and all the different things I'm sure you've covered, you pull that money out and keep moving.
Yeah.
So you said that was about 10 years ago that you bought that first one?
Yes.
So in a decade, you've built up a $30 million portfolio. So you've built up about $10 million.
$3 million.
$3 million a year.
Yeah. And most people that say they started 10 years ago, they could get to a lot more than $30 million, but they're using other people's money.
Yeah.
You know, they only own a portion of their deals. And that wasn't something that at the time I was interested in doing. So I didn't really want to be essentially the CEO of a board that's kind of all these people. So
yeah, that makes sense.
It's about the speed I could do it at, buying everything with my money as opposed to somebody else's.
Yeah. Let's backtrack to before first deal real quick. What motivated you? Were you like attracted to real estate at all? Or like, what was your previous experience? What made this something that when you parked there, you were like, I should buy this?
Jeff, I didn't even know I'd bought real estate. Like, I didn't have
enough so good
to know that it was real estate. I just thought I was buying a business.
Oh, wow. Wow.
That's so cool. That is really cool. So you wanted to get into business. So you had like an entrepreneurial side to you.
Yeah. And I was always. Sorry.
You're good.
I was always entrepreneurial and trying to figure out different things to do. And that's the thing that just stuck. And, you know, people get caught up on this. I've got to do this with my life, or I don't feel fulfilled because I'm not passionate about X. You can get really excited about almost anything if you decide to.
Yeah.
Did I ever have this lifelong dream of like owning RV parks and mobile home parks? No, but I freaking love it. You know, like people can't get caught up in that. Like my dream job is X.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually really like that because sometimes I'll find myself with people like, what do you do? And like, not that I'm bored of what I do. Like I love what I do, but my answer would be like, oh, I fix and flip houses. I then refinance and buy rentals. And it sounds just like so mundane. If somebody asks Heather Blankenship what she does, she's like, I own RV parks. That's what I do. And I have a bunch of masterminds. And you're like, you're always excited about it. So you really did just buy an RV park and then turned it into a passion. And I think that's awesome. And that's not probably, that's for sure why you found so much success in that industry.
Yeah. And the RV park stuff is even more exciting because like you said, the flipping or just buying like duplexes and triplexes that can get kind of mundane. You're kind of doing this thing over and over again. In RV parks, there's a couple different types of RV parks, but if you have a short-term RV park, it's very similar to a resort.
Yeah.
So the average day is 3 days and everybody's in and out. And not only do you have RV sites and you have rental campers and you have camping cabins and you have a glamping aspect to it. Like 10 different streams of income. So you've got this side hustle with like renting golf carts. you have laundry facilities in those. So you essentially have a laundromat inside the RV park. So you've got that business going on. The camp store at one of my properties took in almost $200,000 last year.
That's incredible.
Like store, like all these different businesses within your business. There's restaurants at most campgrounds, like all these businesses within your business make it something crazy and exciting every day.
That's wild. All right, we got to dive into that. So you're driving cross country, you bought an RV park, and now not only is it an RV park that to me, I'd be like, oh, it's simplified. There's 20 things. People park RVs there. No, there's a restaurant. There's all this kind of stuff. How did you then go from being like, oh, shoot, they actually said yes, I guess I'm buying this, to then like building a business and a team that could effectively run, because that's very complicated. Like compared to what I do, I'm a one project, not a one project, but we run projects and each project is independent of another. It makes sense. It's easy. It's done. You're running like 8 businesses within the umbrella of one park. How does that look like? What does that look like today?
Yeah. So it's interesting at the, you know, I was a normal person. So I had my like $1,000 rent and I paid my like $200 electric bill, normal stuff. And so at the closing table, they're like, we're going to have to pay a deposit for the electric company. They're like, okay, I can do that. They're like, it'll be $20,000. You're like, what? And then you get your first electric bill and it's like, you know, 15 grand. And you're like, holy crap.
So yeah.
Like those big numbers, you get used to those really quick when you haven't seen them before.
Yeah.
And learning to run that level of an operations, that property was in bankruptcy. So they had none of that going on when I got there. So I guess it made it a little easier that I was able to, you know, I figured out the sites, I added the cabins, you know, I added the rental campers, I added the restaurant, like adding each aspect of the business and just continuing to creatively figure out more streams of revenue gradually probably made it easier than like jumping into one.
That oh yeah, for sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Going on. And how do you manage it now? Each department has a manager. So now I manage the managers. And, you know, the kitchen's going to have a manager, the housekeeping, you know, there's 40 something, that one property that we're still talking about, there's 40 something rental units there. So, and they all run like an Airbnb.
Okay.
They, you know, you have linens and a quick average stay of 3 days. And so you got a housekeeping team that you're running, you got a maintenance team you're running. Got a reservationist that you're running because it's not like Airbnb where people are booking through somewhere else. So you're really managing the manager at this point.
Yeah, that's rad.
What when you took over that property, like I love to hear like the how, because like I'm thinking of like someone that is like, man, I'm really inspired by Heather. I want to go find an RV park and I want to buy an RV park. But like, even like how did you come up with like the $20,000 down payment for the electrical deposit?
Yeah. So I was a finance manager for Enterprise, mm-hmm. which is a normal job. I can't remember what I made. That was so long ago, but a very normal W-2 job. Mm. Sorry.
No, you're fine.
A very normal W-2 job. And I was 26 when I bought the park. And when I was younger, I had this goal that I wanted to retire at the same time as my parents did. Mm. So from the first time I started working, I had started saving money. I had a set percentage that I wanted to save. So I had a savings account with a little bit of money for the age that I was. It wasn't anything dramatic, but it was enough money that I could pull, you know, a couple thousand bucks to do a few things like that.
Yeah.
Whew! Bless you.
Bless you.
I'm just messing up all
over. It's all good. You're killing it.
Yeah. So I had a few thousand bucks that I could pull different things from for that.
Bless you.
Thank you.
That's rad. All right. So that jumped from 3 million to 13 million. And what was the course of that? 10 years?
Yeah. And, you know, it's been at probably 10 million for a couple of years.
Okay. Bless you.
Who let the cat out over there?
I think if it's three times, it means somebody's thinking about you. Or maybe it's four. In some sort of culture, means someone's thinking about you. So it's all good.
So you said you worked at Enterprise in finance?
Yes.
That's so funny. So I was a branch manager for like 2 years.
Yay! Yeah. That's so crazy.
It was the worst. It was the job that propelled me to real estate because I hated it so badly.
Yeah.
In the rental side, right?
Yep. Yeah, it was horrible. Yeah.
I was in rental and moved to their car sales division and was a finance manager. I freaking loved that.
Oh, really?
They almost got me to stay. So I'm like, my last week, I was like, I'm done. They gave me an opportunity. They were like, dude, brand new company car, we'll get you a computer, we'll get you a phone. It's $100K salary. And then you can still earn commissions. It was to sell their fleets to other companies. And I was like, that's really hard to say no to. Because it was like $100K, really easy job. I get the entire month of December off. Or I go into the unknown, not knowing if I'm going to make a dollar or not.
You know what's interesting is I think the way they do their management trainee program and they have you manage the stores and like you're responsible for more than I think most kind of corporate jobs make you responsible for the way your income is. Looking back, I didn't realize how much I learned from that company. And I learned a ton about running a business and you don't even know you're learning that. So people who, like, I can remember being in college and that was kind of thought of a BS job. Like when you graduated, it wasn't like something super exciting.
No. Yeah.
But for people who don't realize it, you are learning a ton. It is actually a great program and I feel like sets you up for success if you really try.
Yeah. Like one of the funny things, like we pay for coaches. I'm sure, you know, you pay for education too. That's how we continue to grow. And one of our coaches one day was like, well, you need to be having a monthly or a daily sales meeting and you need to be going over KPIs every single day. Yeah. And I was like, oh, this is so brilliant. And then I thought about it and I was like, this is exactly what I did as a manager at Enterprise. Like, we looked at KPIs every single morning. I had one-on-ones with every single team member once a week and just checking in to see how they're doing. I'm like, this. I acted like I had thought like this coach had reinvented the wheel. And then all of a sudden I realized that it was the same thing that I'd already been doing for.
And then even their car sales division, like they teach you all these like emotional things about selling, like the feel felt found and all this different stuff that like you use in buying real estate and you don't even think about.
So funny. So in that first RV park, you talked about adding a bunch of other things to increase the revenue streams. That sounds intimidating if like you've never owned an RV park before. Like how did you know that was going to work out? Like where did the faith come from to invest your hard-earned money into growing this park?
I think I'm one of the most impulsive people you will meet. Like, impulsive. And I don't do anything small. Like, for example, I ran a marathon before I ever ran a 5K.
I love it. That's so good.
So, you know, most people are like, I'm going to try to add a cabin and see what happens. And I'm like, I'm buying 20.
Yes.
Or same with the glamping tents. Like people are like, you know, I think I might try and add a glamping aspect and they'll get like two. And I'm like, I'm adding 15.
Yes.
So It's that whole, like, either do it or don't. Stop trying to, like, stick your toe in the water for different things. Like, commit.
And yeah. Make it happen. Yeah, everyone wants to, like, beta test these things, right? They're like, well, let me try one and see how it goes. And then if it makes money. And then they make money and they're like, damn it, why didn't I do 15 of them? So you're just skipping that regret of not doing a ton of them at once.
Wait, yeah, and when you buy 20, you have no choice but to succeed. Like, if you have one, you're like, oh, that didn't really work out. But how hard did you try? Because if you buy 20, you're going to work a lot harder because you know it has to work.
Yeah.
That's a whole thought process of burn the ships. I forget who says that. Some author somewhere says that. Like, burn the ships when you go on a new adventure because there is no going back.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And one cabin, one RV site, one whatever, that's a hobby. 20 of them, that's a business. That's something you can scale and grow and create systems that can make money past what you're able to do, right? Having one, it's creating a job for yourself.
Yeah, one is not revolutionary. It's not life-changing.
Yeah.
And so the 20 cabins last year brought in about $500,000. So
it's incredible.
You know, if you'd had one, and when I say cabins, they're these tiny, they're the same thing as like a tiny home.
Okay, yeah.
About giant, you know, 20-person cabins.
Yeah.
Tiny home kind of things.
Are they dry cabins? Like no water or plumbing run to them?
They have a kitchen and a bathroom.
Oh, wow.
Stuff. They're just small.
Yeah.
In order to the regulations to be properly zoned and permitted, they have to be under 399. They have to be 399 square feet or less.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they're kind of like a little hotel room almost.
It's like cute sense. And fun though. Like the coziness of a small cabin is like really appealing.
It creates that unique experience we talked about earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It fits the vibe of what you expect if you're going to go and stay at a little cabin at an RV resort, right? Like it creates that experience. It fits that vibe. Real quick, I want to go back to this because I forgot to say the finishing line. You went from a $3 million asset to a $13 million asset in 10 years. Listeners, you can't save that money. You can't save $10 million in 10 years. If you can, show me how. I would love to know how. It doesn't happen. You have to buy assets that, in the meantime, we just heard that she made $500,000 on her cabins last year from just this one property.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you created that $500,000 revenue stream, just one of the revenue streams in this one property, as it continued to gain equity through appreciation and is now worth $10 million more. This is the benefit of investing in real estate and actual assets that grow over time.
Yeah. And it's not just that, it's the cash you make.
That
property will bring in a little over 2 million, close to 2.5 million actually this year.
It's incredible.
Got a 45% expense ratio. So it's not just the growth of the value of the property. You're bringing in cash every month too.
Yep.
And then you can obviously, some people probably spend that money. You can use it to continue to grow your portfolio. And I'm not working there every day.
Yeah.
You know, my why is I get to spend most of my time with my kids at home. And man, sure, I can't get off my phone, but I am around them and spending, you know, a lot more time with them than most people get to do. It gives me that freedom.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can we go into some of the specific finances on either this first park or a different park or whatever it may be? But I think that would be really interesting, right? Because it's like a lot of people that listen to the show would very well know maybe financing on multifamily. Okay, this is the cap rate in the state I buy at. This is how I evaluate that. This is how I know this is a good deal. What would be some of those numbers on this RV park?
So ask me a specific question.
Yeah. So how do you evaluate if you're buying a mobile or a RV park at a good deal? Is there a cap rate? What's the metric or what are some of the metrics that you'd look at?
And so it's interesting. People get hung up on that cap rate.
Yeah.
And cap rates are absolutely part of the valuation, but it's really more of an art than a science. Mm-hmm. It's not the exact measurement because people measure the profit. So you're doing this off a profit and loss statement. It's a business. It's not just a rent roll that you're looking at with your five or six expenses that you might have on a small multifamily. You know, there's a huge list of sources of income, and then there's a huge list of different expenses. And so playing through that is part of that art because, you know, Pop's truck might, you know, okay, so 88% of the industry is owned by mom and pop.
Okay.
Only 12% is institutional,
which
means numbers are not great when you're getting the loss statements. They're not clean.
Yep.
So when you're going through the expenses, you've got this truck or you've got this insurance expense or you've got like meal expenses, things that the next owner isn't going to need.
Yeah.
They're not that they can't do that. They can legally write off the truck. They're probably using it for some business. You know, maybe they're having employee meals, like these different expenses that if you really start digging through it and pulling them out, there's a whole lot more there than it looks like there is.
Yeah.
And so the art of kind of digging through that profit and loss statement and figuring out what the property could be is where the money's at. And so, yes, they're on a cap rate. And so RV parks, you know, you can find them at 6 or 7% cap rates, but that's really low. You're looking at more like a 8, 9, sometimes a 10, depending on exactly what you're looking at.
Okay. And then your biggest, when you're getting into an RV park, your biggest value add, is that through correcting mom and pop operations and turning it into like an actual properly ran business? Or are you having to go in and like renovate cabins, renovate restaurants, do stuff like that as well? Or is it more in just the fixing of the management?
Both. It depends on the property. Mom and pops can be really great operators. And, and pop often like really awesome at something. It could be, you know, woodwork and the cabins look fabulous. Or like just some form of maintenance. Pop is usually like really great at that. And sometimes they take a lot of pride in their properties looking really awesome.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that they've been awesome business people. On the flip side of that, you'll meet some of them that had a different life before they became RV park owners, and they're really great business people, but they're not good operators of the property. So it just depends on which type of park you're looking at. So our industry has propelled forward a lot with software. And so we finally got some really great software options a few years ago. And I switched to a company called CampSpot.
Okay.
And they offer dynamic pricing and site optimization.
Oh, nice. Which means
at 50% occupancy, my price increases 10% every 10% of occupancy.
Okay. Yeah.
And no different than like a hotel would or an airline would. And my income grew by 50% just from that software.
Oh, absolutely. That's incredible.
So think about buying a deal and you go in and literally just implement a software and you get 50% growth. And, and that's probably an extreme case, right? But even if you got 20%, like from just implementing a software.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Other deals that work similar to a flip for y'all where you go in and you need to fix everything.
Yeah, yeah. And then what type of financing do you generally have to get on an RV park? Is that just like a commercial loan? Is there specific people you go to for that?
Yep, they're commercial loans. And I have had the best luck, regardless of where I've been, with local banks and credit unions. They're going to be your best friend. The national lenders, the ones that are willing to even look at it, it's tough. Like it's not an easy process. So those national, those local banks and credit unions are where it's at.
Yeah. Okay. I find that being a recurring theme on our show of the people who do not non-traditional real estate, but really just things above single family. It seems like everybody that we know that's in another market or doing really just commercial loans, they're always getting better rates from their local credit unions and local lenders in that particular area because they have an appetite for that area and a better understanding for that area than like a Chase Bank or a Wells Fargo would.
Yeah. It's not as risky to them. Now, I will say, you're buying mobile home parks, there's some Fannie Freddie programs that are really great, but mobile home parks have to meet certain requirements to qualify for those. And when they do, they're really great programs. But the percentage down can be significantly higher.
Gotcha.
That was actually gonna be my next question on the RV parks. What's with those loan products, what are generally the terms of the loan?
So the local banks and credit unions, I usually end up putting 20% down.
Okay.
A different type of lender, sometimes you can see it as high as 40%. So it makes it really, the really tough barrier.
Yeah.
You're not using a local bank or credit union.
Yeah. Because if you're talking somebody buying your $13 million one, they're dropping $7 million. Okay.
Yeah. It's a lot of money. So those local relationships are key.
Absolutely.
And then, if you were evaluating a park and you're like, okay, this park is worth X right now, but if I go put in 20 new glamping cabins, a couple tents, and a couple trailers that you're providing for other people who don't have trailers, could you get like a capital improvement loan in addition to your loan for the RV park?
Yes.
Nice.
Absolutely.
Okay. Because I was just so curious about that because it's an asset class I know nothing about. I'm like, man, that would suck.
Same thing as what you're doing for your properties. I'd write out my budget, have my contractors. I would need my engineering drawing to make sure that it was going to be approved by the city and all those things. And at that point, the bank would also give me the loan for the CapEx.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. Do you find, what are some of the things you're doing to go out and find RV parks?
Yeah, that's the hard part because people will say, well, I don't ever see RV parks for sale.
Yeah.
You're not looking. Like,
yeah.
We're not going to be on the MLS. Like,
yeah.
Wait, are you serious?
That is not where they're at. And so there's niche specific brokers for all different asset classes. And a lot of people will be like, well, I want an RV park in X city in X area. Okay, well, there's not going to be a niche broker for the three RV parks that happen to be in that town.
Yeah.
So a lot of those niche brokers cover regions of the country or I was a RV park and mobile home park broker for Colliers for 4 years. And so I covered the US and Canada. So you have huge territories. So you could have a niche broker. Cold calling is for sure the best option. This industry is all about relationships. Mm. When I was in Maui, I got a phone call from a guy that I've been trying to buy his park for 3 years. 3 years.
That's crazy.
So it's a long game with those mom and pops, like just kind of continuing to be there for when they're actually ready to sell. And then they have that one bad day and they're like, F it, I'm calling Heather.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's what it is, right? When it's a mom and pop thing, it's a lot more emotional for them than it is for you. So something happens in their life. Something happens in the business. Somebody moves out. They're like, this is just too stressful. I'm done. Because it's an emotional decision. It's not a business decision all the time for those guys. What amount of deals do you analyze per RV purchase? How many properties are coming in as actual leads that you're then spending time underwriting and deciding if you're going to move forward on those?
Yeah. And so it was very few with that are listed by a broker because most of those in today's market end up so competitive, you're almost in a bidding war.
Yeah.
And I'm not an institutional buyer. I don't have money that's as cheap as institutions do. Yeah. So I get in a bidding war. And so the cold calling, though, and meeting owners at conferences and different things like that, I think where I'm on the national board for the industry. I'm the president of Tennessee, the executive director. I'm the chair for the young professional, all this BS, that stuff. I have relationships with those people. So my leads are a lot warmer than the average person's leads would be. So it's probably not a great metrics for it's probably more like you're analyzing 25 deals before there's one that sticks.
Yeah.
It's not as high as like a multifamily where the numbers are like, 1,000 deals gets you to 100 to make your offers. And it's not as high as that. There aren't that many properties.
Yeah.
But for me, it's probably more like 10.
Wow.
Because those leads are a lot warmer.
That's incredible. That speaks to the benefit of networking properly, right? Or in having a social media and having kind of a following behind this, people know you're the real deal. So it makes it way easier for you to close deals. We're even finding in our local market right now, like 8 months ago, we decided to dump a bunch of money on actual like cold calling, TV commercials, a ton of off-market marketing systems. And they work. They definitely add to our deal flow and make it to where we're able to sustain the number we want to do. But what we've been surprised with is we continue to get about 40% of our deals from just organic lead source. From, hey, my buddy knows that you buy houses and here's his mom selling a house. Like, it sounds weird to say, but building relationships with people in your industry will ultimately lead to a ton of deal flow. And like, yeah, you don't want to just bank on that. And that's why you guys probably do the cold calling and other sources too. But building those relationships is just as key.
Yeah, I'm in Vegas right now looking at a property that was a lead I got from someone I met at a conference 3 years ago. And so, and I only have that relationship continued from social media. I met y'all a month ago and we've all communicated 10, 12 times.
Yeah.
Then because we follow each other on social media.
Yeah.
So being able to get those leads from those different sources, it's your deal funnel. You've got to have. You said, 40% are organic. Well, you've got that other 60% coming from all these different sources.
Yeah, exactly.
And those different sources have different times. Like we talked about, those brokers are something you can buy right now. But that guy you met at a conference is 3 years later. So you need that deal funnel constantly flowing because they all have different time frames.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to dive too deep into this, but I want to see how this plays out. That guy that you met at a conference or like say somebody that has sent you leads. How did that networking go? Did you go up to him and hand him a couple business cards and be like, hey, I'm Heather. I buy RV parks and walk away? Or how did that look?
No. Oh my gosh. So the key to being at a conference is, first of all, don't take your spouse.
Yeah.
Do not take your girlfriend.
Yep.
Do not take your buddy that's not meant to be there. And the reason is you need to be there at breakfast with the people who get up at the freaking crack of dawn, and you need to be drinking with the people who are there till 3 a.m.
Yeah.
Because your goal is to maximize all of your time.
I love this so much.
Yeah, the person who's there with you, first of all, it's not fair to them. And second, they can't grasp that unless they've been in that, because those deals are made at breakfast and those deals are made at 3 a.m. drinking whatever with your buddies.
Yeah, 100%.
That's how you build those relationships. And so that deal came from a guy. My mom was at that conference with me. She's my COO.
Oh, nice.
And it was a guy that we had drinks with, him and like another group of say 10 people each night. And that was just our group at the conference. There were like 10 or 12 of us, and he was one of them. And so they get to know things about you, no different than we did in Maui.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's how that stuff develops.
Yeah. I think it's so key is going deep with a few people. And this is what we always try and do. Like, I actually never thought I was like a good networker until people started to be like, hey, you're really good at networking. And I'm like, really? I don't talk to everybody. Like, I get like, I'm a pretty outgoing, energetic guy. But for some reason, when I get around like other people who do real estate, I get like all shy and weird. And like, I'm like, I'm only going to talk to the five that I feel comfortable with. But then those five end up going really deep with and do business with, and stuff comes from it. So for the people listening to this show, like, just know when you go to meetups or you go to conferences or masterminds, don't be that guy running around handing out business cards to everybody, trying to hit every single person. Go deep with a couple people. And I think what Heather just said is so brilliant. Like, wake up early, grab coffee with people. Noah went to the gym with like four or five guys in Maui every morning, and those are the guys that he's been really keeping contact with, right? I'm a little bit different. I stayed up till 2 a.m. drinking with people, and those are the people that I stay in contact with. So we got the 1-2 punch going on. But plan on doing those things, and plan going to conferences to create that space to be able to do those things and make those key relationships, because you see what comes from it. Heather gets leads and gets deals of multi-million dollar RV parks from networking properly.
And I get to come on fun podcast.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. Speaking of that, when am I going to be on the woman show?
Oh my gosh, get out of here. She's like, You know what I love about like making relationships with other people who have this kind of a tangent, but I wanted to say it earlier and I forgot. I love that like now every time I post a picture of my kids on my story, I know that Heather's going to give me a little heart emoji on it. I'm like, yes, I know I have like, it's so, we were just talking about this yesterday, actually. We're trying to build out our social media following, and I'll post like a business hype post, and I'm kind of switching how I do it, but I'll get like 50 likes or whatever, nothing cool. And I post a picture of my kids going to school for preschool, and I get like 100 likes. I'm like, okay, that shows you my following is all, yours is opposite.
I post my kids and people are like, what, you have kids? Why are your kids out here?
Which, no offense to my kids, that's my goal eventually, kids. I'm sorry. I want more likes on business than I do on just the kids post, because the kids post just like, oh, your kid's cute. Like, business is like, oh, you added value, or hey, I actually agree with what you say. Like, you're getting likes for the purpose of what you're building that social media for.
Yeah. And if we go back to talking about the conference, remembering that just because it's in Maui or just because it's in BP conference is coming up and it's in Louisiana. Just because it's in Louisiana, this is not a vacation. This is still part of your job.
Yeah.
Yes, fun because it's in a vacation destination, but this is not a vacation. This is your fun job.
I think you need to start a program. You could charge people for this.
Teach them how to be effective networkers and effective at conferences.
Yes, but also be like an advocate for like maybe particular couples that like the spouse is like, no, it's a vacation, I'm coming. Like, you got to be like, I need to be able to hit the hot button and be like, Heather, send a video of like, and not tap my wife Heather. Never wants to actually come. She's like, hey, I'm staying home. But I know there's tons of people that are like, I can't make it to this because I used up my vacation time in this last conference. I'm like, bro, that wasn't vacation time. That was business. You made money off of going there. So I just see.
It's not fun.
Yeah.
It's just not the same mentality. You have to go with a very different approach.
Yeah. I have fun every day in my business. If I didn't, I wouldn't do it. So it's the same as a conference.
I mean, speaking to the Hawaii mastermind, I went to bed every night absolutely exhausted.
Yeah.
And like dragged myself out of bed in the morning.
I can't really get up.
Yeah.
Like, I'm actually shocked I got up some of the morning. Here in my head, Tarl being like, you owe me $100.
He's like, pay up. All right. Well, before we run out of time, let's talk about the kind of masterminds and coaching that you have going on. You have Intentional Investor and then Intentional Women.
Woman.
Woman. Walk us through what that looks like. Why'd you start those, and what's kind of what's the why behind it, and how are those going? What's your ultimate goal for those?
Yeah, so a couple things. I wasn't on social media even last year. And so I got to thinking, there's so many women that want an option that their identity isn't like so-and-so's wife.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of women who are stuck in really bad marriages and really bad relationships that they don't know how to leave. They don't know how to support themselves. They don't know how to get a job.
Yep.
They're scared. And they need legal help. They need a lot of things. So I started thinking about, how do I reach these women and how do I help these women? And so that starts with social media.
Yeah.
Because how do you find them? So I started building this social media network. I think I have like 30,000 followers on TikTok now, which makes me feel like a total idiot.
That's awesome.
But I find the women that way. And the whole goal of the group is for women to be fierce, fabulous, and financially free. Mm. So there's 400 women in the group now, and I'm hoping that morphs into something physically in person where, you know, I have these homes for women where they go in these scenarios, and you're gonna need counselors and legal help, and you're going to need education and all these different things to help these women. But the beginning of that is the Intentional Women's Group to build a community.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I got scholarships this year for BPCon for girls to be able to go.
That's incredible.
So I'm super excited about that group. You've seen some of the ladies from
Yeah. They are powerful ladies. I want to, for people that are listening that may be uneducated on this, there is no difference between like what women can do in any spectrum, let alone real estate, compared to what men can do, because half the guests, more than half the guests you have on that segment of the show you have are way more impressive than what we've got going on.
Oh yeah, all day long.
By a long shot.
Yeah, all day long.
So like, I don't know, I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, and I think that's huge, because historically real estate has not been an industry that there's been a ton of female investors and female business owners. And I mean, maybe it's just I'm naive, I'm pretty young, but to me, it looks like I'm starting to see a shift. Like even the dynamics at the Maui Masterclass, I don't think it was as even as ultimately we would hope. And that's probably just an effect of how many women are in the business. But I was very impressed with the ratio of women investors and women business owners to men investors. And I was like, if this was a mastermind 5 years ago, I don't think it would look like this. It would have probably been two lone women in the corner like, hey, let's sit by each other.
I think there were 9 of us.
Yeah.
And they were like heavy hitter, like big time. You're like, dang, these women are killing it.
Yeah. I was like, oh, y'all crazy. Yeah.
I would say, I actually would love to see like a statistical chart where it's like, you're all the women and you add up their net worth compared to all the men and you add up their net worth. And like watch the 9 women have equal net worth to the
19 other dudes.
Background who didn't hardly talk to anyone, and he had like a higher net worth than everybody in the room.
I know. I was gonna say, except there was a couple little sleepers in there. You said Travis, right?
Yeah.
Travis was a little sleeper.
Yeah,
he totally was.
Yeah. But see, I'm very attracted to the very quiet people, because sometimes I feel like the smartest people don't say anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they're quiet.
Is that why nobody talks to me? Because I'm so loud all the time.
I don't know. Look at the statistics. Heather was pretty quiet. I mean, you're outspoken on the things you're passionate about, but other than that, you're not just out vocally saying, "I own every parks." Like that's not you. Like you're like, if you come to me and you ask me questions, I'm happy to share.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
No different than Cordell's posting stuff, and I'm like, Cordell rides a tractor.
Bro, Cordell has me dying. He keeps posting all these business idea posts in the group of him just on a tractor plowing strawberry fields.
My favorite is when he puts stuff in the comments and he says, "That's awesome, my friend. In Spanish, we say congratulations."
Yeah,
it's not Spanish.
Oh man, it was a good group. It was fun stuff.
Well, hey, let's. We'd like to wrap up the end of the show by asking you a couple specific questions. One of them being, are you reading any particular books right now, or do you have a recommendation on any books that helped propel you towards success?
Yeah, so one of my favorite books for people who, I feel like even last night I went to a meetup group and there was this guy there and he's totally having analysis paralysis. Like, there was a guy who put the meetup together who's a huge social media person for real estate. And he's like, dude, what are you waiting for? And the guy like gave all these excuses and we're like, dude, you know everything. It's just time to like do something. And so there's a book by Mel Robbins called The 5-Second Rule. Mm. I really love that for all of my students, because I also have an RV park mastermind.
Okay.
And anybody who's just stuck in that analysis paralysis, they need to read Mel Robbins' book. It's okay. All about freaking take action. You count down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. I love that book.
I love it. That's awesome. Too many people get stuck in the details and never do it. And really, it's almost as simple as take action and then figure out how to do it. Like, it really boils down to that. You bought an RV park driving across the country, and now, I told you I was going to say this, you are the RV queen. Like, hands down, 100%. And you just made a decision to do something, not knowing everything about it, figured it out along the way, and now have an incredible net worth, an incredible legacy for your family. Like, that's what being a business owner is about. You can't overthink it. Say yes, figure out how to make the yes an actual yes.
And what's cool is you didn't even use the 5-second rule. You used like the 2-second rule. You're like, I'm going to buy an RV park. I bought it before I got there.
I was like 30 when my mom started saying, don't say I can't, say I can and do it.
I love it.
I love that. Yeah.
In my head like every day.
That's super so cool. Good. So the next question I'd have for you is for the people listening who are inspired by what you've done and want to get started, what advice would you give them?
Don't say I can't
anymore. There
you go. For it. Yeah.
Just get started. Stop talking about it. Stop listening to podcasts. Stop reading stuff. Stop thinking about it. Stop making excuses. The guy last night was like, well, I can't figure out if I should buy in downtown or the suburbs. It doesn't matter. Just buy in one of them.
They're like, both right better now, than not buying.
They're both better than not buying, and they're both great areas. Like, you might get 1% better on the other. Who freaking cares?
Yeah.
Just do it. Yeah. Just do it.
Yeah. Somebody the other day, maybe it was a podcast, I'm not sure, but it said like with the first deal, it's far less important how much money you make. It's way more important that you do it.
Yeah.
Momentum and the train down the tracks and getting moving going.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. How do people reach out to you or get a hold of you? How do they get involved with you if they want to be a part of any of your groups?
Yes. On Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube.
There you go.
Like a chip X3.
Okay, awesome. Cool. And then, yeah, what we'll end up doing is we'll put your handles in the show notes below. So anyone that wants to get a hold of Heather, you'll be able to follow her on Instagram, follow her on TikTok, check out her YouTube content. And then how would they get involved with your mastermind groups?
Same. I'm posting all of those on the social media, and my website is heatherblankenship.com. So you can find all of those through there.
Cool. Awesome. Hey, well, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Heather. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
Please subscribe to our YouTube channel in the show notes below. And if you ever want to get a hold of us, feel free to do it via our Instagrams. You can also follow us for our funny content on TikTok.